The Fan on Demand.
All right, welcome back to Primetime Sports. I am Jeff Blair, sitting in for Bob McCown, Ken Reed, Sportsnet. Here is my co-host enjoying a little Kim Mitchell.
Canadian content, baby. You ready for it? Here it comes. Ready?
It's pretty good.
Oh, you could walk a dog to that baseline.
This is like one of the all-time drinking till you puke songs in the history of Canadian rock.
And it's, it really is. And it's actually, and it's about not drinking. It's about the irony is never lost on me.
I know. I'm serious. Do you ever see, I'm not going to go off on my Max Webster thing and how they were like one of the really underappreciated Canadian bands.
Max Webster and April Wine.
Don't do that.
Internationally.
Love April Wine.
Oh, I love April Wine. They're at the X this week.
They are.
Yeah, and
Miles
I have to work.
Goodwin still.
Miles is going. It's his last summer. They're at the X. My brother's going. My buddy Boomer's going, and I have to work.
They are a fun band.
Oh, man. They like to rock.
I saw them back in the day.
Really?
I saw a lot of people back in the day. They were very good.
I would have loved to have seen the Vino back in the day. I love April Wine.
They're very good. Is Don Banks there? We got Don Banks. Time
How
to talk some
guys?
Football. How
Great,
are
Don.
You, Mr. Banks?
I am well. Thank you.
So you finished your mega world tour, the Don Banks world tour, only slightly larger than Beyonce's tour.
Yeah, kind of. No, not really. I actually always try to see about 10 to 12 teams.
Mm-hmm.
I saw 10 this year. I try to get out early so that I can get back kind of early. And I find that you get your best access and you kind of get the best feel for the team when they're just in those 2 weeks of workouts and then when the first game starts. By the time the second game rolls around, second week of the preseason, I should say, I'm usually trying to get off the road and then try to take in the league kind of from a stand back and big picture perspective.
Don Banks of SI joins us in Primetime Sports. What was the most impressive thing you saw during your 10 to 12 team tour?
Well, I'll give you most impressive, least impressive. The most
Good.
Impressive thing I saw was the Saints offense. Not only was rookie receiver Brandon Cooks, who also was a return man, kind of jumped off the page, so to speak, when you saw him in camp, but just the combination of Mark Ingram looking ready to perhaps finally break through and live up to his Heisman Trophy promise at Alabama. The certainty that Jimmy Graham looked like he was back and ready to fully contribute again and dunk over the crossbar in the preseason. And, you know, even guys like Kenny Stills, Nick Toon, that is going to be, I think, certainly the Saints' best offense since 09 and the 11 record-breaking unit. And I don't want to give everything away because we're making our picks this week, but you might see the Saints be my NFC Super Bowl team.
Mm.
The least impressive thing I saw, to be honest, was at Bills camp, where the 2 days I was there, EJ Manuel was struggling. And this was fairly early. The Bills obviously went to camp earlier than anyone, but this was before the Hall of Fame game. And I wrote a piece then that said, look, Watkins is amazing, and he is going to help this Bills offense, but he has to have someone get him the ball. And some of the problems that have kind of developed this month with EJ's game, the hesitancy, the inability to kind of let it go, just bailing out of way too many plays, I saw when I was at Bills camp, and I thought it was a trouble sign, and it wasn't something that was just going to, you know, go away in a week or two, and it's certainly sounds as if we're still in the same situation, if not worse, by now.
Don, we were actually just talking during the break about the Bills quarterback situation, and beyond EJ, they really have zero options, no?
It's not their deepest position by any stretch. You know, if you have to go back to Thad Lewis, he played probably better than people expected at times last year. Jeff Toole, I think I have a stronger arm than him, and obviously Dennis Dixon was released today. So it's not like they have a great option, which I think I saw on a transcript today from Doug Marrone, the Bills head coach, was, you know, their option right now is we're sticking with EJ, obviously, and going to coach him up and stand behind him and say all the right things. But he's not, he has not shown signs of taking the proverbial second-year step yet.
One thing I always thought was that everybody wanted to be a starting quarterback in the NFL. Reading today, and I guess the same can't be said for Mark Sanchez, says he there's no chance he'd abandon this fresh start as a backup in Philly to go start in St. Louis. What's your take on that?
Well, I there's a couple of things. I think he definitely would, but I think what he was saying was he hadn't heard anything and he trusts that he would. First of all, Philadelphia is pretty enamored with him and said that they would be willing to listen, but in other words, Chip Kelly made it pretty clear we wouldn't give him away. It would take a second or a third. That's an awful lot for a backup quarterback in today's NFL, whether you think it's fair or not. Then St. Louis, on the other hand, seems committed in the short term, and I can't stress short term enough, that Sean Hill is the way they're going, and they're not going to panic and try to get a Mark Sanchez for a price tag that may look foolish in time when you would only own him for a year. So I think both sides are saying never say never, but I don't think Sanchez is saying he doesn't want to start. I think he's saying... I love the situation I'm in. I'm playing the best ball of my recent career, and until it becomes real, I'm not going to just pretend that you know this trade rumor is real. It's mostly people just using common sense, mm-hmm. putting a team together that's now quarterback needy with the best available backup who may be available.
Don Banks of SI joins us on Primetime Sports. So the Tampa Bay Bucks are reportedly taking a serious look at Richie Incognito. That begs the question, Don, does the NFL tend to forgive and forget a little too quickly?
Yeah, I don't think they're going to. I mean, they've made it sound like before Richie would be cleared back for an active roster, there would be a process he would have to go through through the league. So I'd be surprised if it's just looked the other way and no harm, no foul. Because at this point, you know, Goodell talked several times during the offseason about the people involved having to at least go through, I guess, a program of counseling or steps to make it sure that they got the message from last year's debacle in Miami. What it speaks to is how bad Tampa Bay has been guard this offseason this preseason, because Lovie Smith earlier said if we wanted Richie Incognito, he'd already be here. Well, if these reports are accurate, and I believe they are, then it just shows you that they're being forced to take a second look at that player as an available talent, because their guards have really been pretty bad, and it kind of underlines how much the Carl Nix departure hurt Tampa Bay.
Hey Don, one of the things that one of the storylines to emerge during this preseason that I find kind of interesting, and I know you and a lot of other people have written about it, this whole concept of joint practicing or joint scrimmaging, and of course Bill Belichick has come out and been really enthusiastic about this. Look, you're never going to replace exhibition football games. We know that, but is there a chance that the NFL may somehow cut into its preseason and instead of that, increase the number of scrimmages? I know there's a financial component here. It's basically free revenue for the owners, preseason football. But do you see these scrimmages becoming more and more popular, and maybe eventually, and I'm not talking this year or even next year, but maybe when the new collective bargaining agreement even comes around, it might be something that might replace one or two preseason games?
Yeah. Yes. The short answer is yes. There's been a lot of coaches talk about potentially just that scenario in the future. The problem is, shortening the preseason has obviously been around now as long as the 18-game regular season talk has been around. We are not close to the 18-game regular season because the players are very much against it, and the players have kind of public opinion on their side because they could stand up and say, you're worried about player safety, and yet you want to increase our workload by another two games. That makes no sense. And the league has not won the PR battle on that front.
Mm-hmm.
But there's some owners who now believe that the preseason may not be going down to three or even two games anytime soon, because the coaches still need it as an evaluation tool, that those extra games. But other coaches, and Belichick has kind of been the most lean forward on this, have said that perhaps those joint practices could be a middle ground. In other words, I've heard everything from they don't play week four of the preseason and they give teams 2 weeks to get ready for the regular season, get completely healthy. All you really miss is this Labor Day weekend, mm-hmm. which the TV ratings are low. Obviously, no one plays anybody truly important or tries not to in week four of the preseason, yada, yada, yada. But you're right. The owners do not want to give up the gate. Some don't mind. Some don't want to give it up. So it's still a very fluid situation. But I know this. 18 games are not around the corner. And I don't think shrinking the preseason is going to happen immediately either. I really think that for now the joint workouts is an idea that's going to grow more popular. It has grown more popular, and it is seen as a potential bargaining chip as a way to get around shortening the preseason.
Don, you hit on it just a little bit when I mentioned Mark Sanchez to you, but I didn't follow up. What do you think St. Louis is going to do with Sam Bradford out for the season? What's going to happen there?
It's hard to see him back with the dollar amount they owe him next year and the injury history. And they like him, but they may not be there. Let's say the Rams completely tank the season. Jeff Fisher's not in the safest position in St. Louis. Les Snead is not in the safest position, the general manager in St. Louis. So that team may not be the one to make the decision. But it's hard to look at Bradford, and I think I have this stat right, who will have missed 31 out of possible 80 games through his first 5 years as a starter once he's out all season. To me, that spells St. Louis probably, because of the price tag and the injury history, has to come up with a new direction at starting quarterback next year.
Speaking of injured players, Wes Welker is sidelined again with a concussion. This is what, number 10? 7 to 10. At what point does somebody, I don't know if he can force a guy to stop playing, but at what point does somebody try to, exercise some influence over him here?
I think when they come up with the science that says after 5 concussions, your brain is much more likely by X amount percent to be damaged long term. I think only when that science, and maybe it's closer than we know, but when they have the ability to really give you an individualized look at the damage or non-damage you've done with multiple concussions. Right now, it's really... If there is that science out there, the players aren't getting it individualized, and it's just, everybody's different, and everybody's level of punishment absorbed could have a different long-term implication. But he's had 3, I believe, in 10 months, and to me, even more so perhaps than the multiple concussions over a long career, and I think he's in his 10th season now, is the potential for a lot of concussions in a short period of time doing the most damage. And if that science is available and being made, accessible to the player, then I think that's the argument that is most likely going to get somebody to stop and consider, where the upside is and where the downside is. But I have a feeling we're kind of still a ways away from that kind of specific information being available, because the concussion, the science of concussions is still, I guess, evolving.
Along those lines, Don, do you ever see a day where it becomes mandatory retirement if you reach a certain number of concussions? Say you get 10 in your career and you have to retire, because you have to be licensed for a boxer. Well, we can talk about that. But you do have to be licensed to box. Can you ever see a day when maybe you have to be licensed to play in the NFL in terms of something like that, concussions?
I see a day where they can tell you, there's sensors in your helmet, and they can tell you how much damage this concussion has done. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they'll ever be able to put a number on it, but if there's another way to quantify the damage and it reaches a certain level, I think that day could well be in the future, yes.
Don, it was good of you to join us today. Thanks so much.
Okay, guys. Have a great week.
Thank you, Don.
That is Don Banks of Sports Illustrated. Just terrific work.
concussions are so, like Don was saying, we still don't really know enough. And you can tell a guy is concussed, he doesn't believe you. And I mean, and then I could see the day coming that if they said, if you have 10 concussions in your career, you're out. Then can't you see other teams going, hey, how many concussions does that guy have? You know, he's got eight. Let's, you know.
No, the biggest problem for me is coming up with a definition of a concussion.
Exactly. It's such a gray area.
Well, I would like to think that if a league endeavors to do that, it would follow the absolutely strictest medical guidelines when it comes to concussions. Mm-hmm. But my concern about professional sports is they always have a tendency to think that they need to put their own definition.
Our doctors versus their doctors, league doctors, team doctors.
Well, I've talked a lot about the whole idea about team doctors is just freaking ludicrous. I mean, in every sport, the idea that you are relying on a club employee to make what are in effect life and death or career-altering decisions on players is absolutely ludicrous. I don't want a guy making money from the club deciding whether or not a guy's ready to go on any particular night. And it's just far, far too open for conflict of interest. I'm not casting aspersions on doctors by any stretch of the imagination. But, you know, I know from a couple of people who, one in particular was a team physician in the Canadian Football League. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. The CFL's a little different. He said, absolutely, you're under pressure. Last thing a team wants is 9 offensive linemen on the DL with a concussion.
Yep.
It's one of the things nobody tells you. Hey, guess what? We've got too many guys on the DL right now. But he said you can do the math. And we still haven't really come to grips with that in professional sports, the idea that that you have a club doctor. I mean, I've long felt there's so much money in professional sports that I have no idea why the Players Association doesn't hire 4 or 5 doctors for every team and have them render judgment on players.
And then again, in certain sports, I have no idea why the Players Association always stands up for the guy who's suspended and never the victim of a hit.
Yeah, you know what, though? Legally, it makes sense that you do it. Legally, it makes sense that you would do it. Legally, it makes sense that you would try to defend your turf.
Yeah, but lots of things don't make sense legally.
Well, it depends on how you look at it.
Well, I'm a rebel. I'm an outsider, so yeah. You know how I
tend to think, especially when, in the case of player unions, you want to defend your turf. You want to draw as many lines in the sand as possible. Just because it's like anything else. If you don't, you're always in a situation where you're giving. But anyhow, can move beyond that. It was interesting. Here we are before we went on the air talking about the Buffalo Bills quarterback situation with Ryan Walsh and Matt Marchese and Don Banks comes on. What's the least impressive thing you've seen? Buffalo Bills quarterback.
Yeah, EJ's not that good, and beyond EJ, there is nothing.
Yeah, there are some franchises that are just not meant to.
Excel?
Yeah, it's just not meant to happen.
Could be another long year in Buffalo.
It could be. But that is, it's remarkable when you think of all the work the Bills, and I'll credit the Bills. The Bills have done an awful lot of work overhauling their team in the past 3 years. And I get that there's no doubt EJ Manuel's your guy, but my God, given the quarterback attrition rate in the NFL, you've got to have a usable backup. I understand the thinking. If EJ Manuel goes down, there's nobody that's going to be able to take us to the Super Bowl. I mean, that guy isn't going to be out there.
Or to 500.
But I mean, you've got to give yourself more cover than that, especially given the way this guy plays. You've got to give yourself more cover than that.
Hot off the field, not so much on the field.
Mm-hmm, exactly. So there you go. Richie Incognito as well, getting another look from the Bucks.
I can't see a team going through all the garbage they would have to go through just to get that guy back into the lineup. And then could you imagine his first day of practice?
Well, I think
choppers overhead.
I think Banks made the point that there is a procedure here.
Yeah.
That the idea that Richie Incognito will somehow walk in and win a job with Tampa Bay and you know, be ready to go during the opener is not accurate. There are some steps he will have to take, some things he and his agent will have to do in conjunction with the NFL. But I just find it, I don't even find it odd that this is happening. I mean, I've said often, the NFL and NFL fans, they've got the shortest memories of any group of fans in professional sports.
See Baltimore Ravens training camp standing ovation.
How about Ray Lewis became a saint?
Yeah. There's a lot of things.
Ray Lewis became one of the grand NFL. Old men of the game.
The inspirational leader of the game.
Yeah.
You know, Mr. Great Speech, exactly. All that stuff.
The Hamilton Tiger Cats, to bring the focus north of the border, are scheduled to play the Toronto Argonauts in the annual Labor Day Classic. Now, CHCH News in Hamilton has reported that the CFL is exploring, and they quote a CFL source, the CFL is exploring the idea of moving the Labor Day Classic game from Monday, September 1st to Tuesday, September 2nd, and holding it at the Rogers Center, this because Tim Hortons Field is not yet ready to be used. Bob Young is the Hamilton Ticats owner. We figured we'd go right to the top to get an update on this and find out what the options are. Bob, thanks so much for joining us in Primetime Sports today.
Great pleasure to be on with you guys. I do have to correct you. You've gone to the bottom. You're actually talking to the caretaker of the Hamilton Tiger Cats.
I'll tell you what, you are you're the caretaker. You call yourself the caretaker. You're the man. We know that.
No, my job here is just to help the organization here be successful, and their job in turn is to make our fans happy, and therefore I'm at the bottom of the pyramid.
All right, as the caretaker then, on Tuesday, where are you going to be caretaking, Rogers Center or Tim Hortons Field?
On Tuesday, we will have already trounced the Toronto Argonauts, our hated rivals, in Tim Hortons Field the day before.
There you go. No, there's no chance of this game being moved to the Rogers Center.
Failure is not an option. We are, as is the city, as are the builders, working a night and day between now and 10:59 Monday morning to ensure that our fans have a safe and very exciting experience at Tim Hortons Field.
So, Bob, what is that going to take? Is the field going to be checked out? Is it going to be inspected? And from what I'm reading, there it 18,000 seats, is that about right for Labor Day?
That's correct. Our upper levels on our west side won't be open, but that still leaves 18,000 seats that will be open, including our very noisy end zone patios. And so it's going to be a raucous place, even though it will still be somewhat of a construction site, although to be very clear, all the construction equipment and areas will be carefully fenced off. All the areas that our fans will have access to, including those who make the journey down the QEW, all those areas will be a first-class entertainment experience.
You sound very positive right now, Bob. What's this experience been like for you? Has it been draining? Has it been enlightening? What has it been like waiting for the stadium to be completed?
Well, the story is when I got involved in the team, my mission was less about running a football team, because I knew nothing about running a professional sports team. But it was about, as a fan of the Tiger Cats, I was very frustrated, as were all the other fans, with the fact the team lurched from financial crisis to financial crisis for the last, 40 years. Ever since 1972, when the last time the Grey Cup was held in Hamilton, I guess we held it in the 1990s. But in any case, 1972 was the last time the Ticats made money. Mm-hmm. And our goal was to reinvent the franchise from a business point of view. We've launched a technology company alongside the Ticats, but the biggest single one besides the new television contract is the new stadium is going to allow us to compete with the Saskatchewan Rough Riders at being able to deliver such a great fan experience. We'll be able to generate a lot more revenue in the stadium than ever before.
Bob Young is the caretaker owner of the Hamilton Tiger Cats, and he joins Jeff Blair and Ken Reed on Primetime Sports. How disappointed were you when this stadium wasn't wasn't ready on time. I mean, obviously everybody wanted it done. I know I live in Hamilton. There was a real buzz about the stadium. A lot of people were looking forward to it. But just on a personal level, as a Ticats fan, as someone who, as you said, wants to get this thing or has gotten this thing in a position now where it's going in the right direction, how disappointed were you that you weren't able to get this stadium done on time?
Well, Jeff, as you probably know, I'm a bit of an optimist.
Just a bit.
Both my strength and my failing. But in any case, as an optimist, it hasn't been frustrating at all because you only build a new stadium once every 60 years in most municipalities. And the fact that we're getting such a high-quality stadium, this Pan Am Stadium is going to do such great things for the city of Hamilton. We're just announcing today that on September 27th, Keith Urban and Darius Rucker are coming to Hamilton to Tim Hortons Field. And these are world-class musical acts that I suspect these are going to be scarce tickets very quickly on Thursday morning when they go on sale. And that simply wasn't possible without facilities of the quality that Tim Hortons Field is going to be in Hamilton and is a great example of why we are so excited about this stadium. And, the fact that it's a couple of months late, we tried to build it the city and the province and the builders and the Pan Am Games Committee. We're all trying to do it in record time. And we're trying to get it done in about 18 months, and it turns out it's going to take 19 months or 20 months. And I think the delays are disappointing but very understandable. But ignoring all of that, the quality of what we're going to get at the end of the day is just so exciting that it puts everything else in perspective.
Will there be will concessions and washrooms and things of that nature be up to standards in time for the Labor Day game?
They will be up to standards that will be significantly better than what Ticat fans used to put up with at 60-year-old Ivor Wynn. But no, they won't be at 100%
right.
Of what Tim Hortons Field will be able to deliver once Tim Hortons Field is properly up. But when I say that this is going to be a great fan experience, there's nothing in Toronto, and I'm including the Air Canada Centre and the Rogers Centre, that will compete with the fan experience at Tim Hortons Field. This is a 21st century facility and has all the great design elements that have been innovated on across North America in the last, 50 years. It's going to be truly an exceptional facility.
Bob, you're an optimist. I'm sure your players are excited to get into this new stadium. And since you're an optimist, you have to look at the standings. You see your Ticats at 1-6, but they're in the playoff hunt.
Yeah, but we've been in every game. This is a very young team that we've assembled. We took a big gamble in the off season to go younger and better, in effect. And we went to the Grey Cup last year, as you know, but our coaches were not happy not winning the Grey Cup. And they took a hard look at what they had to do to not just get back to the Grey Cup, but more importantly, put ourselves in a position to win the Grey Cup. And so we took a big gamble on going much younger, and it's, like any gamble, it sometimes takes a little while to pay off. I think we'll do just fine in the second two-thirds of the season.
Players are going to say, it doesn't matter where we play, the yardage is the same, but has this been tough on the players, kind of not knowing when they're going to move into the stadium, not really having a home yet this season?
What it's tough on is the 13th man phenomenon.
Yeah.
They play it at McMaster's Ron Joy Stadium, and that's been a wonderful success, and McMaster University has been incredibly generous with hosting us, but it's a very small stadium. The fans, even when they scream their hearts out, can't make a big difference in terms of sound volume compared to somewhere like Regina with their Mosaic Field and their 40,000 screaming fans. So Tim Hortons Field will change that. Even with the 18,000 fans, it's going to be a noisy place, and it'll get us back to having home field advantage.
Bob, thanks so much for joining us today. Hopefully hopefully things work out for you guys.
They are working out brilliantly. There's no hopefully to it. We're all very impatient to get into our new home, but it's going to be spectacular when we get there.
Thanks a lot, Bob.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That is the caretaker owner of the Hamilton Tiger Cats.
Caretaker. I like that term.
Yeah.
It's good.
There is a Pan Am Stadium meeting, by the way. I believe, what is it, Monday? I think it's tomorrow or Wednesday. And I know that there will be people in Hamilton looking at this going, yeah.
Got to stay positive. So Bob says,
stay positive. The owner, the caretaker owner, the owner of the Tiger Cats says that forget everything you've heard about the Labor Day game possibly being moved to the Rogers Center on September 2nd. The Jays are out of town, by the way, so it is available. But forget everything you've heard about that. The game will be played in Hamilton. It will be played at Tim Hortons Field. And there will be 18,000 seats available to be filled. And as Bob Young says, are the concessions going to be 100% ready? No. Are the washrooms going to be 100% ready? No. Are they going to be better than what Tiger Cats fans got at Ivor Wynne a couple of years ago?
Yes. What's the number one concession you will need at Tim Hortons Field if you go to the Labor Day Classic?
It is always beer.
I was going to say beer.
Number one. Yeah. And I'm going to throw this in.
Okay.
I can't even remember. I can't remember the name. It's a very small concession stand. Made the best, had the best porchetta sandwich.
Porchetta sandwich.
Oh my God, it was good. And I can't remember. Somebody's gonna have to reach out on Twitter and tell me the name. It was a tiny little place, but my God, that's about 12 beer and a porchetta sandwich, and I'm good to go.
That's healthy. That's healthy living. Now, do you and Brunt go to the games together?
No, Brunt's got the expensive seats. Brunt's family are like founders.
Oh, really?
They've had season tickets for about 40 years.
Wow.
I just buy tickets and go and sit.
He's old money in Hamilton.
Brent is old money in Hamilton, exactly.
He is the Osmac of Hamilton. Then.
He is the Brunts and the Osmacs, yes. They are the Osmacs of Hamilton.
So the Osmacs are from nearby Oakville, so perhaps they will take the chopper to the game at the new Tim Hortons Field.
The 18,000 chopper.
Yes, 18,000 seats will be ready along with the chopper landing pad for the game. So the Osmacs will go.
So are you worked up about the Keith Urban Darius Rucker concert? Darius Rucker. God, I remember
Hootie and the Blowfish.
I didn't like Hootie and the Blowfish when they were popular.
No?
Keith Urban's just...
I'm not a
country
guy. I like my country, but I'm not a... I don't know. I'd go, but...
You like your country. You like your real twanger country.
I like my twang country. I like my Blake Shelton, my Toby Keith, you know.
A Kenny Chesney guy, or is that a little too beachy?
I'd go to Kenny Chesney. That'd be fun.
Yeah. Okay.
But I like my boys around here. I like, you know, I like my Blake Shelton. I like my
boys around here.
Toby Keith. But just Toby sings a good one. How's it go? I can't remember. Oh, Beer for My Horses, him and Willie Nelson. That's good. You like Willie Nelson.
I like Willie Nelson for a variety of reasons.
Well, Whiskey River.
Yes. I like Willie Nelson, but the rest of those guys. I'm sorry.
Troublemakers.
No, it's just
outlaws.
I can't get into it. I've never been. You know what?
What music do you like?
Reggae.
You're a reggae guy?
Reggae, punk, old punk.
Well, I could see that.
Brit pop, you know, like the Blur and all that.
Yeah. Reggae's great, though.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah, I like reggae, but country just doesn't
do it for you.
Nope, no chance,
You like Jimmy Buffett?
Eh.
You like Kiss?
Yes.
Okay, you can come to
Kiss. Like Kiss.
Bob wouldn't come to Kiss with me this year.
Bob who?
The guy that usually sits in that
chair. Oh, McCowan? Of course, McCowan. Like he's gonna go to Kiss.
I went to Kiss and Def Leppard double bill a couple weeks ago. It was stellar. You come with me next. Def Leppard, good British group. Sheffield Boys.
Def Leppard's great.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of peroxide there, I'm sure.
Oh, they got the most ripped guitarist in the business,
no,
Phil Collin.
I'm talking about the fans.
Oh, well.
Lots of peroxide. And
we, the Def Leppard fans, we tend to lean a little older.
Yeah.
Made along with our Kiss fans. But that's cool, man. We like to rock. It's all good.
Lots of cougars.
20,000 strong down there.
There you go.
Yep.
We'll continue our discussion of rock music.
Sweet. I like to rock.
Country music. When Primetime Sports continues with Jeff Blair and Ken Reed on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Network.
Prices like no other. From a club like no other. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca.
All right, welcome to our Ask the Expert segment. Oh, wrong show. It's Jeff Blair and Ken Reed on Primetime Sports, the Sportsnet Radio and Television Network. We've got 9 minutes to fill.
9 minutes.
You're gonna ask me some questions.
Yeah, we said how we're gonna fill this time, so I thought, why don't I just write down a list of questions? There will be no follow up questions other than the ones I have already written, and I managed to write down.
How come I don't get to ask you questions?
Because it was my idea.
Okay.
So I wrote down 9 questions here.
All right.
They're all sports related.
False. Now, question number 2.
Blue Jays currently 5.5 games out of the wild card race for the second spot in the American League.
Mm-hmm.
Start a 3-game set tonight against the Boston Red Sox. 10-3 against Boston so far. Jeff Blair, do the Blue Jays have any chance of making the postseason?
No.
Second question. What if they sign Bucky Dent?
Maybe.
Yeah, like we're talking 1978 Bucky Dent.
Yeah, 1978 Bucky Dent.
Going along those lines, what is the greatest comeback you've ever seen by a baseball team? Now, I'm talking not single game, but I'm talking maybe along the lines what the Yankees did back in the late 70s.
Greatest comeback I've seen. I don't remember the details. It was that's how great it was.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'll tell you what it was because I covered the game. It was the Yankees coming back and beating the Boston Red Sox when Grady Little left Pedro Martinez in Toulon.
Oh, wow.
That was two game stories I've written where I like literally just came that close to having a meltdown was that. And
is that
then
2003?
I don't know the exact day. I just remember the subway flooded. It rained like hell. The subway was shut down for a while in New York after the game. And I went out to a bodega in just a couple of the street corners away from Yankee Stadium and walked in and bought a 6-pack of Corona and sat on the steps of the bodega drinking it with the owner and his wife because wow. It was just the subway was shut down. And the other one was the Arizona Diamondbacks beating the Yankees in the World Series when Luis Gonzalez flared a ball over Derek Jeter. And that was like I had to totally blow up my story and rewrite it. Those would be the two.
See, I said I wouldn't ask you any follow-up questions. I'd love to, but I'll stick to my rules. The most forthcoming expo with the media during your time in Montreal?
Most forthcoming.
Mm-hmm. Most honest, most upfront Montreal Expo during your time covering them in Montreal.
That would either be David Segui to a fault or probably John Wetland.
Really?
Closer. Probably John Wetland. Okay. Yeah, I mean, you know, Moises Alou, Cliff Floyd, great guys. But I mean, in terms of guys who would just absolutely be totally honest with you. Although I did ask Segui one time about... So maybe not Segui.
Yeah.
We'll go with Wetland.
Segui got busted for something there, didn't he?
I can't remember.
Yeah. What's with all the Pete Rose stuff lately?
Because it's the, 20th, 25th anniversary?
25 years.
That plus the fact that you have a new baseball commissioner and a lot of people are expecting that Pete Rose will eventually be reinstated to the game and then somehow find his way into the Hall of Fame. I think we're probably a couple of years away from that happening, but I think it will eventually.
If Pete Rose, why not Shoeless Joe?
A great point.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely no reason for Shoeless Joe not to be in there.
Jays are 10-3 against the Red Sox this season. Why?
Because the Red Sox suck.
That's what I thought your answer was going to be.
And John Farrell's their manager. No, it's just because they suck. They're a bad team. They don't have a lot of.
Not a lot of bats belong, aside from Pedroia and Ortiz, that will intimidate you. What's the Jays' rotation next year? And when I say next year, I'll say, you know, at the start of the season.
It'll be unnamed pitcher 1. It will be R.A. Dickey. It will be Marcus Stroman. It will be Drew Hutchison. And it will be Jay Happ with Aaron Sanchez starting in the bullpen.
So they're going to give away all those quality innings for Mark Burley, even though he's under contract for next year?
Can I go Dickey or Burley? Because I think one of them will be traded.
Sure you were, because I broke my rule of not having follow-up
questions. Yeah, the only thing is the thing is you could probably get more for Dickey because Dickey's like makes like $12 million a year, which is quite a valuable contract. But you need another major starting pitcher in there, I'll say.
For those of you listening to Primetime Sports, it's been a huge, huge day here at Sportsnet.
Yes.
We've all moved into a new office location behind us. You guys were in the bullpen over here behind me, a little small room where all the radio magic took place. I was downstairs on the first floor down by our studios, but now we all sit in a big happy group. The magazine is in there, Sportsnet magazine.
Yeah.
Radio's in there, web is in there, TV is in there. Alex Sixero does updates right behind me now. You guys sit right behind me now. What do you think of our new work area?
It has, in one day, changed my vocabulary.
Has it ever?
Completely. Mm-hmm. I have not, I mean this honestly, I have not had a day like today, probably in the last 30 years, where I have sworn less, dropped fewer F-bombs, made fewer vile references than today.
We are all shaking our head in agreement, and I've been here to witness it.
I feel like it's a withdrawal thing.
The question I wrote right after that is, when will you break the ice and become normal Jeff Blair in the new workspace?
Never.
Wow.
It won't happen.
It can't happen.
It will not happen.
There's too many microphones in there.
There's too many microphones. There's too many people doing live stuff.
Yeah.
That's my big fear.
It's kind of like walking into a room you've never been in before. You don't really know what's going on, but you'll get used to it.
No, yeah, it'll be fine. I'll figure out a way. I might just type out all those words. Instead of saying them, I might type them out.
It's the quietest place I've ever been in. I think it's going to be a newsroom. It's going to change.
It'll be fun. Yeah, you know, once Sixero's in there eating lunch and stuff like that happens, and you know,
it's going to get gross.
Tim and Sid will get in there, and they'll, you know, there'll be a moment of tension.
Sid's smell will take over the room eventually.
I think we should get a pool here on how long it is before McCowan actually walks into that room. Oh. My guess is it's 7.5 months.
I'd say he'll probably walk into that room sometime in 2017.
7.5 months?
He's not going in that room.
He's not
going
to go in that room.
And the last question, what was your favorite question?
This one.
Yeah, that's a good one. It's a good way to end.
It is a good way to end.
Yes. There you go. So that was 10 questions about basically nothing.
That was relatively painless.
And I did it on the fly.
That was good. What is Ryan Walsh? What are you laughing at?
Because it wasn't that good.
Yeah, it's not over at 6. We still got 2 more minutes to kill. You were so proud of yourself.
Well, you said only write 10 questions and I'll fill. You could have filled on the last question.
That's all right.
That was the problem.
I'll get people set for the Jays game tonight.
Okay, how can you get people set for the Jays game tonight, Jeff Blair?
Well, it is not. Mike Wilner called the last series the most important series of the 21st century.
That was a big one.
The Jays lost it. This is, I think Greg Zahn made a valid point.
Mm-hmm.
If the Jays sweep the Red Sox, because Greg's point is you got to win 2 of 3 the rest of the way.
Yep.
If the Jays sweep the Red Sox, that kind of pulls them even based on what happened with the Rays series.
Sure.
Like 4 or 6. So then you can move forward from there. Be the Jays and Red Sox today. First of a 3-game series tonight on Sportsnet 590, the Fan of Sportsnet. Joe Siddle, Jerry Howarth, and Mike Wilner with the call of the game. Wilner will take calls afterwards.
Yes, he will.
Probably.
Here's something I've noticed, Jeff.
Yes.
Now, I'm not drinking the Kool-Aid here, and I think the odds of the Jays making
it. You know, there's no point in saying that because everybody's convinced we are drinking the Kool-Aid.
I know.
Just don't even apologize for it.
If they somehow claw their way back into this, and I don't think they will, but if they did, they have a 4-game series against Seattle to finish the year, followed by 3 against Baltimore. So who knows?
Well, yeah, and you know, we made the point earlier that Baltimore's a flawed team.
A flawed team that just keeps winning.
I frankly like the Jays' chances of catching Baltimore 2 weeks ago more than I did at getting the wild card spot. And now I think you're pretty much down to the wild card spot, and it's going to be difficult with all those teams between you.
It's going to be tough.
For Ken Reed and a bunch of other people.
There they are,
all of them, including the ones that joined us on TV.
And all your new friends and your new workplace.
All my new friends in my new workplace. It's Jeff Blair saying thanks for joining us in Primetime Sports. We'll be back tomorrow on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Network. Baseball's next. Stay tuned.